Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. Welcome to the day before Christmas, which I think deserves its own sound effect. And I don't know what we would play. How about just, let's give it the Fry-yays type sound effect that we need to, yes. Merry Christmas! There we go. All right, I like it. The applause and the booms. Hey, welcome.
Merry Christmas Eve Eve.
Merry Christmas Eve Eve. That's exactly right. Hey, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas Eve Eve and Christmas to you as well.
You doing good?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Weekend full of football?
Yeah, it was a unexciting weekend full of football.
It was kind of lame, really.
Nothing but blowouts, unfortunately.
Nothing but blowouts, and you look at it and go, huh, y'all made it to the playoffs like that.
I was dead wrong on SMU, by the way.
You were way dead wrong, which, by the way, is the only game I watched.
Yeah, it was bad.
But, wow. Okay. Yep. And then Friday night was just like, womp, womp, womp.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. A great, great, great show. So I got Representative Ernie Yarbrough calling in at 4. I love it when Ernie calls in. I mean, I don't even need Red Bull. If Ernie calls in, it just fires me up. So Representative Ernie Yarbrough calling in at 4 p.m. We're going to be talking about several things with him. And then the Triple Dipper just filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right. The Triple Dipper. Three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. Number one, well, I'm calling it Biden's fever dream. I will go ahead and tell you I stole that line straight from JP. But a fever dream. What is a fever? So a fever dream is like the slang version of that is like a very strange, often unsettling or bizarre experience that feels like you're in a dream. Well, we're in Biden's fever dream right now. He is acting as if he won the election. He's acting as if all the things he is running around doing right now, that he has some kind of mandate that says this is what everybody wants. And it's absolutely not. Yeah, we're in the middle of Biden's fever dream, and we'll talk about that as number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, term limits. So did you see the story about Republican Congresswoman Kay Granger? This one is awful. So she's apparently been missing since July. Excuse me? Yes, a congresswoman has been missing since July. No one knew where she was. Well, they found her. She's in a dementia ward of a nursing home. No longer capable of doing her job, yet still holding the position, and her office is still there and open. It's just unstinking believable. And I wonder, is the argument for term limits being made on its own? Well, we'll talk about that. Number two, Triple Dipper, term limits. And then number three, faith rising. So we'll talk about term limits and faith rising with Ernie Yarbrough, but I've also got a clip from Cardinal Dolan up in New York. And listen, there's a clear indication that faith is fashionable again, if you will. And I don't mean that like faith is a fad. I don't want to say that. It's as if faith, it's like it's okay for faith to be in the public square again. And that's just good. So we'll talk about faith rising, number three, on the Triple Dipper. All right, let me jump on into today's Right Side Way monologue. I will tell you, by the way, that what I'm about to say, a part of this is in this week's podcast. So this week's podcast, we're going to bring it out a day early because the whole podcast, the Right Philosophy podcast, touches on Christmas. So if you're looking for Christmas discussion or something to watch, I encourage you to catch that. It's going to come out tomorrow instead of Wednesday, so it'll be available for all of Christmas. But this story that I'm going to tell you in a minute is part of it. And I'll remind you also, too, by the way, guys, attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee. He is a 30-year veteran in the practice of law, and he's the sponsor of the Daily Right Side Way monologue. And I'll tell you more about him in a minute. So look, one glance around the world, and you're going to tell pretty quickly that we are not in stable times, right? I mean, the last 4 years, we've seen the outbreak of conventional warfare in Ukraine, the likes of which have not been seen in Europe since World War II. The Middle East, less stable, with the attacks on Israel by Hamas and Hezbollah and the nation of Israel. Israel, in turn, has been leveling whole swaths of the Gaza Strip, just emasculating Hezbollah, too, in Lebanon and Syria. The southern border, Yep, the U.S. southern border, total mess. China sending spy balloons over our skies. The Canadian government's in upheaval. It's fair to say that the biblical reference of wars and rumors of war is very apropos. I mean, at every turn, the media is filled with headlines and punditry that lead off with terms like backlash and anger and harsh response, and one side accuses the other, and unrest occurs, and civil discourse is too often lost. And then comes Christmas. Christmas, whose true meaning is to welcome and celebrate the Prince of Peace. Peace, by the way, not as the world gives us, for in this world we will have trouble, but fear not, he's overcome the world. Remember that? I'm not talking about peace on earth, I'm talking about peace in us. The peace that surpasses all understanding, the kind of peace that you can have when nothing else in the world around you looks like you ought to have peace. You know, there's something absolutely different about the season of Christmas. I am fully aware, by the way, that not everyone believes like I do that this season that we're in is the timestamp of a birth of a Savior through divine intervention. But even if you set aside faith and you just look at Jesus as a historical figure alone, you'd still have to take note that no one has changed history more than him. No one has impacted more lives than the life of that one small child born in the manger. But yet even the hardest among us are aware that something different fills the air during this season of hope. We see it in the giving of gifts, the gathering of families, the time off from school and work. We see it in the stories of extra sacrifice and hard work to buy that one small gift for a child. It's evident in the wreaths that hang on doors and the lights on the trees. And say what you will, but Christmas is just different. Now, to be sure, there are those who don't celebrate for reasons of faith or maybe no faith. Christmas is not everybody's time of celebration. And I also know that families can find it to be a time of poignancy marked by the loss of a loved one or the absence at the table of a service member who's serving overseas. But underlying the story of Christmas is a hope that things can be different. That even in the lowest of times and the darkest of moments, that a star can light a new way forward. That peace can break out in a time of unrest. Now, Christmas has a way of changing things, too, I think. As surely as the history and faith of the world changed in a lowly Bethlehem manger 2,000 years ago, there are still moments in time today that cannot be explained except to say that the spirit of Christmas overcame the worst of circumstances. Like, peace broke out when it made no sense to have peace. I mean, we can look to Washington's crossing of the Delaware at Christmas in 1776, a moment that led to victory that spawned other victories. A miracle in the midst of hardship that brought us to the birth of this nation. Books have been written about moments of faith in times of crisis in which answers came from seemingly nowhere during the Christmas season. Is it just a sentiment? No. There's something decidedly different about the Christmas season. Something that brings together what was once apart. Something that extends a hope that tides will actually turn. When peace descends like a blanket to cover the cold of discord. Like the miracle of the battlefield of peace that broke out in the trenches of World War I. You may have heard this story before. It's often referred to as the Christmas Armistice of 1914. So just weeks before that Christmas in World War I, Pope Benedict had actually called for a temporary ceasefire on the lines. He was asking that the guns may fall silent, he said, at least upon the night that the angels sang. But war is where men die and things get broken, right? Officially, the Pope's plea for peace on the battlefields of Europe in 1914, it was actually rejected by leadership on both sides. It's said that the misery of trench warfare in the first war to end all wars was on a scale that was unparalleled in world history. And on the night of Christmas Eve, 1914, in the mud and the slog of the trenches in Belgium, the 1st Battalion of the Royal Warwickshire Regiment from England was dug in, and they were utterly miserable. The trenches were dank and cold and fearful. The men of the regiment had been on the line for endless days and sleepless nights. A British machine gunner named Bruce Bairnsfather, he later wrote that as he huddled in his freezing narrow trench covered in mud that he began to hear singing. Singing? I mean, that made no sense. No one sings like that in war. So he called out to one of his fellow soldiers asking if he could hear it too. German soldiers were across no man's land in their own trenches singing Christmas carols. And there in the darkness, some of the British soldiers began singing back. And then a voice with a thick German accent is said to have called out across a span between the lines saying, "Come over here!" Well, that wasn't normal. This did not fit the moment. They're in war. They're in the trenches. Well, after the call was repeated again, one British sergeant yelled back. He said, "You come halfway and I'll come halfway." And what happened next is recorded in soldiers' diaries, letters home, dispatches from the front. It said that one man climbed out of his trench and walked into the void to meet the Germans. And a short time later, he returned smoking a new cigar and smiling at the astonished men of his unit. And then all across the lines, running the length of the Western Front, groups of French and Belgian and British and German soldiers all declared unofficially a ceasefire. And they crawled out of their fortifications and they met in the middle to celebrate Christmas. And for just a little while, peace broke out at Christmas right there in the trench lines. It's said that soldiers who had been fighting and dying just most recently began to shake hands, sing together, swap cigarettes and cigars, and pour the occasional libation. And in more than one instance, impromptu soccer games broke out. Western soldiers gave German soldiers haircuts. Men of both sides helped their enemies retrieve the dead who littered the battlefield. British soldier Jay Redding, he wrote home and told his family, he said, quote, "I shook hands with some of them, and they gave us cigarettes and cigars, and we did not fire that day, and everything was so quiet it seemed like a dream." A German lieutenant, he wrote, quote, "How marvelously wonderful and yet how strange it was at Christmas," he said. "The celebration of love managed to bring mortal enemies together as friends for a time," is what he wrote. It's not clear how many troops actually participated in the Christmas Truce of 1914. Time magazine says that up to 100,000 men actually crossed the lines to celebrate with their enemies. High commands on both sides were said to have been shocked and disapproving. But it was Christmas. Something was different. Peace that surpassed all understanding had taken a foothold, and it was a battlefield time like no other. And a memorial was erected in England's National Memorial Arboretum that commemorates the Christmas truce. It's cast in bronze. It's a plaque. And at the memorial, it depicts on the plaque two uniformed arms reaching out and shaking hands. And 10 years ago this month in 2014, on the 100th anniversary of what has now become known as the Christmas Armistice, the English and German national teams played a match in remembrance of the men who had kicked a ball together in no man's land. It's said that as the day drew to a close that day on the battlefield, that a German soldier walked up and said to one rifleman from the British 3rd Rifle Brigade, he said, "Today we have peace. Tomorrow you fight for your country, I fight for mine. Good luck." So I'm telling you, Christmas is different. It doesn't mean that problems go away, per se. But the season that we're in is one that extends hope in hopeless times. I feel good about where we're headed in 2025, to be honest. But I also know that the road will not always be easy. But I know in the depths of my very soul that the God of peace will be with you if you let him. So my friends, may God richly bless you with the hope of this season, no matter what your circumstances. May peace actually break out in your life, whether it makes sense to have it or not. Merry Christmas from all of us here at Right Side Media. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Yeah, that story is amazing. Every time I read it, it gets to me. And I included, like I said, I included part of that in the podcast for this week that comes out tomorrow. I just felt like it was necessary. But you guys, peace that surpasses all understanding, that's what it's about. The Prince of Peace came on Christmas 2,000 years ago, and he can even stop a battle in full stride. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, so the monologue, I'm curious, anybody had any thoughts on that? The text lines are indeed open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it, same number for both. Yeah, have you ever heard that story before, JP?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite historical stories, actually. Yeah. It's great.
It's really amazing.
I can't remember what movie did a reenactment video of it. Maybe it was a scene in the movie or something, but it's a very powerful story.
It wasn't All Quiet on the Western Front, was it?
It might have been. I've seen that video go around before. It's quite a story.
There's some great old photographs of that, of guys out there in the middle, you know. And there are some who try to poo-poo it and say, well, it was really just made up story in the press, but I don't think so. Mm. I mean, when you've got people writing home about it and journaling about it, no.
My thing is, imagine having to go back to fight those guys after that too, you know? Yeah. Like, that's brutal.
Several texts coming in. Kimball from Harvest says, those World War I soldiers during the Christmas ceasefire and often soldiers in other conflicts aren't really enemies at all. Christmas helps us all remember that. Kimball, Harvest. Kimball, thank you, man. Appreciate you. It's amazing what happens. The sad thing is, war is what it is. I mean, it's where people die and things get broken, and we know that. But it's also amazing when you, you know, my tour, especially my tour in Afghanistan, I didn't live on a FOB. I lived among the Afghan people. It was an entirely different perspective. And I'll never forget, too, in Baghdad, because my job required me to be outside the wire all the time. One time I had a security group that was a security patrol, and we were stopping somewhere, and I got out and was walking into a building, and one of the soldiers looked down from the gun on top of the Humvee and says, "Hey, sir, you going in?" And I said, "It's what I do, man." He goes, "Dang." But that's just, you know, we just did. We just went places. When you're among the people, it changes the perspective. John from Huntsville says, "Phil, spectacular monologue. Also want to wish you and JP a Merry Christmas." You too, my friend. He says, "By the way, JP, your bowl predictions are no longer almost perfect, and I'm glad I switched from your Coastal Carolina pick to UTSA, because UTSA a few minutes ago won 44-15.
I have to admit, my bowl picks are mainly on vibes.
You're a vibe picker?
Until I have a team I actually know, I've watched, you know. I've not watched any Coastal Carolina or UTSA games.
Wait, hang on a second. JP on sports is a vibe picker?
No, because I don't talk about Coastal Carolina or UTSA. I talk about teams I know, you know.
Okay. Coastal Carolina, they have a team?
Yeah, they actually have great uniforms.
I'm kidding.
They have the teal uniforms. You know, they have a teal field, too. It's awesome, but yeah.
Now you're telling me you start picking teams on the color of their uniform.
That's actually played probably a big role in that one.
Thomas from Athens says, "Colonel, thank you for your witness, the opening monologue. Great story of the 1914 Christmas. Many armistice." He said, "I'm reminded also about Christmas in Sarajevo, where for 22 days, a cellist and a string quartet played beautiful music during Christmas time on the rubble of the bombed out town fountain. Even when Serbian bombs were still falling, Huntsville Concert Band played the Trans-Siberian Orchestra arrangement in a concert just about a week ago. Let us all know about the Prince of Peace first coming as we celebrate this Christmas and keep Christ in Christmas." That's a great story, Thomas. Thank you for sharing that. All right. Plenty more where that came from. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all. I'm talking about Alabama. I mean, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. JP.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to change that sometime soon.
Yeah, I think you will.
So all right, all you ruffians have been wondering what's going on. Well, we do have some news. Got a press release. We're trying to figure out when's the best time with the holidays to schedule this press release to go out. Because, you know, we've added new podcasts, and Right Side Media, being the parent company, has got stuff going on. But we also just got a contract to take Right Side Radio to Chattanooga. That's right. You're going to be hearing us in two states now. Thank you very much. So now I got to figure out what to say, because now we're going to be, and that, by the way, that Chattanooga station branches down into north west Georgia pretty strongly too, into Rome and that area. So, whoop! I'm pretty stoked.
We're going to need to modify the intro, but that's a good problem to have, though.
I know. It's a great problem. What are we going to call ourselves? Like the Southeast Regional Syndicated Radio? Anyway,
pretty much.
All said and done, that's because of you guys. It's a great opportunity to do something more and to take our footprint to, you know, what does it say in the prayer of Jabez, to expand our territory. So anyway, we're pretty excited, and more details as things come up. But I'll just let you know that we are stoked to be adding Chattanooga to the lineup, and we'll tell you more about that. We believe we're going to be starting right at mid-January. And that's in part because there's just so much groundwork to do to get ready. But we'll be rolling it out, and there'll be a whole bunch of new ruffians joining the clan. So stand by. I'm stoked, to be honest.
It's very exciting stuff.
Still trying to figure out how all this happened. God did it.
God did it. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, let me step back real quick, too, by the way, and tell you guys. So the Right Side Way monologue, sponsored for you every single day by attorney Stan McDonald. He's a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee up in Huntsville. Great firm, great guy. I know Stan McDonald personally. I think the world of him. He's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law. And not only will Stan advocate and fight for your legal needs, but he's been an absolute warrior on causes that are near and dear to the right side, ruffian community. So he's just that kind of guy. Attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions in virtually every court you can find available to local, state, federal. And when Stan McDonald's on your side, like I like to say, you'll have no greater friend. Likewise, your adversaries will have no greater foe. So Attorney Stan McDonald, if you want to get in touch with him, he's at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee. And here's his number. You ready? Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. And do me a favor, tell him you heard about him on or heard about him on Right Side Radio. I got to do the thing. No representation made the Quality Legal Services. Be informed. Great Quality Legal Services. Support other lawyers. Ba-ba. All right. I got a couple of texts there already. Tony from Franklin, Tennessee says, Colonel, great story about the Christmas Armistice. Says, I've heard it many times, and each time is just as good as the first time. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy New Year in Jesus. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate you, man. Chef Ben from Aniana. He says, Chattanooga, woot, woot. And then he also says, Happy Meatloaf Monday, fellas. I hope y'all have the merriest of Christmas. Jesus is King, and we are one day closer to every knee bowing and professing that Jesus Christ is indeed Lord. Yes, indeed, sir. Yes, indeed. And then Mike from Athens says, woo, God's got you in right side. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, we're stoked. A lot of things happening for 2025. We look forward to where it takes us next. But let me just say, this first dipper I'm going to do is somewhat overshadowed by a piece of breaking news that is one of the most heinous stories that I've seen. So let me be serious here for a minute. You may have seen what happened in New York City on the subway. And we've got pictures of him. I mean, he's up on the screen right now. I'm looking up. There he is again. So an illegal alien, by all accounts, doused someone in something flammable on the subway, lit her on fire, and then stood there and watched her burn to death. Now, I think that there's layers to this story that are disturbing. Number one, illegal alien. Number two, burned a woman to death for no reason that we know of. Number three, you've got a guy who's not even supposed to be here, who was apparently, we find out now, had been deported under Trump and then came back in under Biden. And then you've got a situation where members of the New York PD, there's a video of one of them walking past her while she burned. And I don't understand that at all. I can't wrap my head around that. His job is to protect and defend. And that doesn't mean just to stop a criminal. That means to, unless he was detaining the guy who set the fire and he was saving other lives. But what we see there is someone who didn't even bother to take off his jacket and try to douse the flames. I don't understand it. And then the other thing that still bothers me, and it's part of this day and age we're in, and there's no excuse for it, none, is the people who did not help but had time to stop and film. And so the story is just, it's just awful. And to me, it really almost falls in line with this Biden fever dream that we're in. Because one of the stories that I've got in this fever dream storyline is through the Biden selling off the components to the wall that Trump had already purchased that Biden refuses to build. So Biden's in this fever dream. So what is that? Well, I don't know about you, but I can remember as a kid having fevers and things didn't make much sense in my dream. Like I can still remember having the flu when I was a kid and thinking that I was inside of a bubble. It was just very weird. I can almost picture the moment. Like your hands felt big and everything seemed weird. Well, a fever dream, like in slang, means it's a very strange or like often unsettling kind of bizarre experience. Like you're in a dream and it should make sense, but it doesn't really. That's where we are with Biden right now.
Doesn't seem like real life.
It doesn't seem like real life, but yet it's supposed to be real life. Like in the dream, it's real life. But when you wake up, you're like, well, that was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we are with Biden right now. Biden is doing stuff right now that you look at and go, is he of the mind that he won the election? Does he know that what he's doing is immensely unpopular? Does he even care? Here's the next question. Is he even the one doing it? because there's a story that broke on Friday, and it's getting not near enough traction. But to me, it's one of the most galling stories in the modern age, that the President of the United States, Wall Street Journal, did an exhaustive research piece, and that everything that we know about Biden being like, you know, non compos mentis, having issues with dementia, or at the very least, he's having issues with dementia. What do we say? He ain't right. And we've known it. Well, now we're getting people that are being willing to say it. And the article describes in great detail the who's and the what's and the when's of covering for Biden. Like, even to the point that when the bodies of the 13 service members were flown back from the Abbey Gate in Kabul, Afghanistan, who died in that bombing. Remember that one where he stood there and looked at his watch? Remember that one? That the families of the fallen had to wait 3 hours because Biden was on Air Force One napping and they didn't want to wake him up. My head just wants to explode when I hear that stuff. But it's because we've had somebody who never should have been in the office in the first place. Or at the very least, someone should have had the brass to say, this is not good for the country. This is really bad. Someone's going to find out about this and I can't be a part of it. And where was his wife? I mean, does she just want just another glamour shot on Vogue magazine? I mean, the idea that she would be the closest person in the world to him allegedly and let this happen. But all that to say, we are now in a place where Biden is committing official acts, or at least his name is. How about that? In the name of Biden, things are happening. Where we look at it and go, wow, dude, you are living in some kind of fever dream right now. You are of the mind that you have a different level of capacity and mandate from the people than you really do. And it's like a blind, right now what's happening, we're seeing more and more members of the administration are rushing to get as much of their agenda done in the last 30 days as they possibly can. I'm talking about spending money. I'm talking about erasing debt. I'm talking about selling off the wall. I'm talking about on and on and on. Whatever they can do to get it done, as if they are the ones who are maintaining the office after January 20th. And it's just gross. Just absolutely gross. Well, we're going to talk about it in great detail. I got a whole litany of them. Before I go, I got a couple of text messages. Appreciate all of you. Brian from Huntsville texted in. He said, Joyo Noel to you, Colonel Phil, and all the right side ruffians. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you, Brian. And then Wiley from Gunnersville says, Phil, I believe the illegal who burned the woman to death was carrying out his gang initiation. That's the only scenario I can come up with. I wish you, your family, and all who contribute to right side, a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. Thank you, Wiley. Appreciate you very much. I don't know how to explain that thing about the burning, but I do know this. It happened on Biden's watch. It's an illegal alien who may well not have been here had the Trump policy still been in effect. If the border had been closed, if security had been provided, if they hadn't been a sanctuary policy, you know, in New York City and others, he might never have been there, and that woman might still be alive. All right, we're taking a break right now. We'll come right back. I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper, Biden's fever dream. I got a series of articles, some of which are going to curl your hair in case you hadn't already heard of them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so in this first dipper here, Biden's fever dream, I got a series of stories of things that he's just like scrambling to get done in the final days. And y'all, they are not normal. They are, of course, like that could be said about almost anything that came out of his administration, but these are not normal actions. These are not the things you rush to do. These are purely ideological, agenda-driven items that someone who is either A, not in control of his own White House is allowing to have happen, or B, they are absolutely so ideologically driven that they don't care that they're not going to be in office in a few weeks, and they're just acting like they've got the mandate from the people. So here's the first one, and this is what kicked it off for me. I mean, I could have picked a half dozen. But this one is what kicked me into doing this dipper this morning when I saw it late last night. In a surprise announcement, you know, it had been whispered about, but it hadn't actually been seen in official capacity. Last night, President Biden commuted the sentence of 37 federal death row inmates. There's only 40. There's only 40 death row inmates in the federal prison system. 40. 37 of them now are not going to have to worry about the death penalty. We'll just have to pay for them to live out their terms with life in prison. I don't know if they're going to get parole, but we're talking about people who have been like, here's one of them. Robert Bowers was responsible for a mass shooting at a synagogue. 11 people dead. I take it back. Let me rephrase. There's three of them that did not get it. He's one of them that did not get it. So I guess I should rephrase that. It's a hate crime. If it was a hate crime or something to do with terrorism, they didn't get it. So the Boston Marathon bomber didn't get it. A white supremacist, Dylan Roof, he did not get it. And then Tree of Life synagogue shooter, Robert Bowers, he did not get it. But 37 others did. The 37 others, though, were murderers, some of them. Killed all of them. Killed law enforcement officers, killed children, killed other inmates. Two of them had actually escaped from prison and killed people while they were out and then were put back in prison. I mean, these are not people who have evidenced a life that says you need to have leniency. There's nothing in this that says, Mr. President, here's a single case example of someone who deserves your special attention. No, none of that. The commutation of a sentence should be something that comes to you in a review on a case-by-case basis, and you look at it and go, in the interest of justice, I feel like this is likely. Like you can tell that the jury was biased, or you can tell that the law has changed since then. They never would have been convicted if things were the way they are now. You know, they've served out most of their sentence, and there's a hardship, like the guy's dying of cancer. And I see all that. Not in this case. You don't take 37 people all in one stroke of a pen and do away with their death sentences. You just don't. The only way you do that is if you were not reviewing the cases themselves. You were just literally worried about the sentencing processes that you don't agree with. So we have an ideological, doesn't matter that the federal law was what it was. Doesn't matter. What mattered was Biden didn't like it, or his administration didn't like it. They have literally just made a purely ideologue type decision. It's heinous. So what he basically said was, I don't trust Trump to possibly commute a sentence, so I'm just going to do all of them. What? Yeah, I don't want Trump to actually enforce the law, as you know, a jury of their peers found that they were, you know, I don't know, liable and should be sentenced to death. So Biden has just commuted 30 of the 40. What are we talking about here? That's like roughly, 92%. I mean, that's ridiculous. He just wiped them out. And now the taxpayer gets to pay for them to just live there on death row, not on death row, live there in general population until they're done. And I don't know. What I don't know is they now going to be eligible for parole? I would hope not. But this is part of the fever dream that we're in. Pardons his son, pardons 1,500 other people in a day, and then now he has just commuted the sentence of 37 out of 40 death row inmates, so they don't have to worry about it. Because we don't want them to feel troubled. No. I mean, never mind the victims. Have the victims been notified? Did you notify the victims first, or did they find out by reading it on Twitter? That's what I want to know. I got a call real quick. I'll take it for the break. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Hey, doing okay, but I'm a little bit confused on the commuting the sentence as far as the death penalty. Can he just line item do that if they've been assigned the death penalty, and does it automatically fall back to life in prison?
No,
or is he letting them out?
No, he's switching it from death to life in prison.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Y'all have a blessed day.
See you. Merry Christmas. Absolutely. Merry Christmas to you. Yeah, the men are now. Okay, hang on. I got a piece here from Fox News. scrolling further down, okay, I see a place here now. It says the men that are being resentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole are all convicted of various murderous acts against one person or even multiple. Yeah, it's just, this is just, I mean, you got people like deadly bank robberies, like co-defendants Billy Allen and Norris Holder, who killed a bank guard during their crime. And then one of them who killed two bank employees in another crime. One of them killed a police officer during an attempted bank robbery. Another one committed a series of drug-related murders as part of a gang. Another one killed two people over drugs, and then so did co-defendants Ricardo Sanchez. Two others killed a whole family, including the children. And they got their sentences commuted. Biden's fever dream, man. And we're having to just deal with it. And I can't help but wonder, did he even sign that himself? More on this, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome back. Hour number two here on, Christmas Eve Eve?
Christmas Eve Eve.
Christmas Eve Eve. And by the way, just to let you guys know, we will be celebrating Christmas the next 2 days with our families as well, like many of you. So there will be a best of, we like to call it, where we put together shows from the past and send it in for them to play tomorrow and the next day so that we can also be with our families. So thank you for excusing us and giving us the opportunity to do that. Several text messages. Victor from Huntsville says, Phil, for the 37 with the commuted sentences, maybe Trump could order they all be housed in one large cell and then just allow their natural selective instincts and behaviors to play out. The left should support this as evidence of one of their favorite theories, survival of the fittest. You know what, Victor? I'm for you, man. I'm saying yes. Put them in there. And by the way, when you do, let them stay hungry for a day and then sling a burger in the middle of the room and just see how it goes. They'll be knifing each other over a burger. It's taxpayers will have less to pay for. Jerry from Decatur said Biden's works-based religion is what took those death row inmates off of death row. And if he did that in revenge to Trump, someone should tell him that vengeance is mine, says the Lord, I will repay. It seems to me that he's digging a hole deeper to fall in. Airborne, Jerry from Decatur. Appreciate you, Jerry. Thomas Mathen says, Biden and his evil puppet masters have completely spit on the families of those heartlessly murdered by those 37 federal killers. And there's little known about those affected by the violent ones being among the 1,500-plus that he already pardoned last week. He said, add insult to injury for all the tax money wasted on trying endless appeals and now life imprisonment for the 37. Yeah, it's, yeah.
Yeah, the families who have to go through Christmas with an empty seat at the table anyways, congratulations. The person who did that is now off of death row. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, like that is,
yeah,
it's awful.
The Christmas commutation, which considers only the criminal and not the victim. Brian from Decatur says, I don't understand how people that care for this country, including some Democrats, and this man in the White House is one of its biggest enemies. Yeah. Mike from Athens says, I thought the Supreme Court makes the final decision on death row inmates. How does Biden trump them? Oh, no, Biden has commutation and pardon power. He does. There's no denying it. He can commute a sentence. He can pardon a crime, but he is abusing that power. It was never designed so that you could do these blanket pardons. Well, let's see. If you've got a drug crime, well, we're going to wipe that out because I think drugs are okay. No, Phil, nobody would do that. Oh, have you seen the mayor of Birmingham? He literally pardoned anyone back to 1992. I'm not sure he was born in 92. He pardoned everyone back to 1992 of drug possession. Just pardoned them in municipal crimes. You can do that as the executive, but you're not supposed to do it that way. That's the thing. Blanket pardons do not represent a case-by-case review of the circumstances of the criminal's conduct. They only represent an ideology of the person doing the pardoning. You don't have 37 out of 40 people on death row suddenly get commuted sentences overnight, and that means you'd like carefully consider the circuit. No, you didn't. You were against the death penalty, except maybe like in a few really, really bad ones. Oh, okay. So the ones that murdered a police officer or killed a whole family or, you know, committed multiple crimes after they escaped from prison, those people get commuted sentences. But the one who like blew it up in the name of white supremacy, we can't allow that to happen. Come on. At least try to make sense. Okay, let's move on to other things within the Biden fever dream. That's where we are right now. The Biden fever dream. How about this one? Exclusive. Reuters, Dateline 3 days ago. Over the weekend, by the way. U.S. to announce a final package of new arms for Ukraine in coming days. I don't think he realizes the checkbook is about to be taken away. Then again, maybe he does. But another $1.2 billion. Another $1.2 billion to Ukraine. And nothing's changed. There's been no calling for a plan. There's been no, what is the exit strategy? There's been nothing except, how much do you need? Just keep the pictures in the drawer. I don't want them to see that about me and Hunter. Just keep that in the drawer. How much do you need? Another 1.2. I got 1.2. I need to get him 1.2. Somebody write me a check. I'll sign it. That's where we are with Biden. And that's just kind of gross, to be honest. But as long as we're spending money, why don't we just wipe out debt? Hello? Those of us who have, you know, debt that we'd like to have wiped out, can we get some of that? The Biden administration, CNBC, over the weekend again, CNBC announced that it would forgive another $4.28 billion in student loans for 54,900 borrowers who work in public service. Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You work for the government, you get your student loan wiped out. How's that come out? How's that work? Where's the private sector? What do we get? You can't do it for the private sector. I only do it for the ones, you know, who have the guaranteed government paycheck who didn't get their jobs shut down on them during COVID. The ones who didn't lose their businesses. The ones who are service-oriented and they work on the taxpayer dime. 54,000 of them just got their student loans wiped out. For the love of God. Biden has forgiven more student debt than any other president. Well, of course he has. He has cleared nearly $180 billion for 4.9 million people who have student. By the way, that student loan debt, I am not denying that it might be burdensome. Maybe your circumstances changed and you took the loan out at a time when you expected to make good money. You lost your job. You had a health issue. Who knows? No. What we got here is it's just the fact that there's a student loan. We got to do with that. We can't have that. But they signed up for it, sir. It's a contract. Oh, we can't do that. We're going to wipe that out. So you're just going to give them money. No, we're going to wipe out the debt. That's called the same thing. That's a windfall. If you suddenly experience a windfall, guess what the IRS does? By the way, are they getting taxed on this? I want to know. Hey, can you look that up? Look that up. It just occurred to me. If you get your debt wiped out by Biden, do you get taxed on the windfall? And I can't help but wonder if, since everything else in the world is taxable, is it possible that this is too? You got something on it?
It's right here. It says, in general, if your debt is canceled, forgiven, or discharged for less than the amount owed, the amount of canceled debt is taxable.
Whoa. So not
but
only.
That says in general, though.
In general. Mm-hmm. So, well, I guarantee what's going to happen now is Democrats are going to be screaming for legislation to allow this to be non-taxable.
Yeah, and this is straight from IRS.gov, by the way. So
if you're somebody who's sitting at home thinking, dude, I just got my student loan wiped out. How much was it? It was like $12,000. It was like $30,000. It was like $49,000. I got my degree in underwater basket weaving. It was very expensive. Okay. By the way, that's taxable income, huh? Yeah. Now you got a tax burden you didn't have before.
By the way, do the people who have to actually pay their student loan debt and don't get the opportunity to get pardoned, do they have grounds to, somehow sue the federal government for that?
I can't help but wonder.
Yeah.
Because this is what the law might call disparate treatment, where you treat one group of people differently than others simply because they're different people and you're not supposed to do that. Now, disparate treatment is usually in terms of race and gender and that kind of stuff. But man, just because you work for the government, you get your student loans wiped out because of why?
But like you're rewarding people for being, you know, irresponsible with their money or, you know, congratulations, you got in such bad debt, you get a reward. It's like people who tried to not get in that position are getting, you know, looked over.
That's exactly right. Who's on line one right now?
Ev from Huntsville.
Ev from Huntsville. I'm sorry. Let me grab that real quick. Hey, Ev, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good. What's on your mind?
thing, really, now that you mentioned that taxable income, I'm in a real estate business, and when people were getting their mortgages short sale back in the late 2000,
yeah,
10, yeah. 8, 9 era, they were getting taxed 1004 as taxable income.
Ah, hey, Ev, your phone just broke up, man. We just lost you. You there? We lost him.
I'm here. Oh. I don't know.
Okay, now I got you back. Are you on a speakerphone or something? I think it was cutting out.
Well, yeah, I'm in my car, and I didn't know if it was going to give you feedback or not, so I was on my cell phone.
Well,
I
recall that, and it was a shock to some people to suddenly have a taxable base they didn't expect.
Absolutely, and we had a lot of customers upset about it, but there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
I originally was calling because there's a movie called Silent Night. And okay. I don't know if y'all discussed that. I had to go do an inspection in between your conversations. And it's a movie about in World War II. It's supposed to be based on a true story where a German squad and an American squad came together one Christmas Eve in a German household out in the forest.
No, I have not seen that one, but I'll check that out. Is it like available on streaming somewhere?
Yeah, I always watch it every Christmas, and I came across it years ago, and it's a German lady and makes them put their weapons outside.
How about that? I'll check that out, Ev. Hey, thanks very much. We got to go to a break, but I appreciate you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Hey, take it to a break there, brother. I just realized I was running long, but yeah, that sounds like one I got to check out. Silent Night, I love the sound of that story. All right, listen, we're taking a break. We're coming right back. I'm still in Biden's fever dream. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Several text messages. Victor from Huntsville says, Phil, instead of calling it Christmas Eve, call it what it is. Festivus for the rest of us. It is time for the annual airing of the grievances.
I think I know what you're referring to.
I can't say it out loud. I'll lose points.
okay. Yes. That is where I heard that. Yes.
Chris from Gadsden says, so are your best of shows for Christmas going to be a replay of shows where Lee from Huntsville was guest hosting?
No.
No. Chris, Mr. Snark. Brian from Huntsville says, how much beer did our taxes pay for in erasing those student loan debts? Ain't no telling. I mean, that was a whole lot of, dude, I got my underwater basket weaving degree for free now. That's what that is. Bruce from Springville says, I can't wait till January 20th when the garbage finally leaves office. No doubt. And then John from Huntsville says, Phil, you're doing a fantastic job so far. Keep up the good work. Thank you, John. Appreciate you.
Maybe not so long more after that reference.
Come on. So I got a story here. In the Biden fever dream, part of it is to make sure you give all the money to all the right places. How much money we got? We got money? Is there any in the account? Drain the accounts. What do we got? Write the checks. How about this one? Townhall.com. Amid growing unrest over rising crime, reports are emerging that staffers within the lame duck Biden administration are pushing outgoing President Joe Biden to allocate millions in taxpayer dollars to support initiatives that effectively defund the police. What? Like, come on. Please, really? Yeah, all in the name of appeasing the far-left fringe of the Democrat Party. So the group is lobbying hard in the White House, apparently, for an organization called Climate Justice Alliance. Now, that doesn't sound like the most liberal something or other. I mean, the only thing missing here is the word transgender. I don't know what. Anyway, Climate Justice Alliance. CJA, Climate Justice Alliance. CJA has a long history of supporting defund the police movement. They're very pro-Palestine. They want to end the U.S.'s collaboration with Israel. And last year, the EPA, the federal EPA, announced that it would give a $50 million grant to Climate Justice Alliance. I mean, where would you think they're based? Where would you think?
Are they in the U.S.?
They are.
San Francisco?
You're very close. Berkeley.
I put them in the same category.
Yeah. It was all part of the Biden spendorama to, you know, so that's happening.
What are they, by the way, what are they doing with that $50 million? I'm very curious.
It's something to do with climate justice.
Sitting around talking about how bad the climate is.
Yeah, justice. Yeah. With climate stuff about justice and climate. It's very important.
It sounds like it.
It's saved the world.
It's $50 million worth of importance.
Don't mock it. It saved the world. You know, it's things. It's very important. All right, so New York Post has a story. The Biden border wall. It's not a Biden border wall. The border wall materials. Border wall materials purchased by the Trump administration, which have laid there on the ground in a holding yard, unable to be put up because the Biden administration canceled the building of the wall. The Biden administration has now been trying to sell off the border wall materials, like at rock bottom fire sale prices, just like 5 cents on the dollar, just scrapping it out. Well, there's been a lot of stuff happening to try and stop that, to include the fact that Donald Trump, in his individual capacity, has now filed suit asking a judge to halt the fire sale of border wall materials. Story here on New York Post. Says that the current administration is selling off the border wall materials at rock-bottom prices, imposing financial losses on the U.S. in an attempt to defeat the pro-wall policies of President Trump. It is unlawfully encroaching on the incoming administration's exercise of the executive power. By the way, how is anyone looking at this and go, well, this is the responsible thing to do? You've got illegal aliens setting people on fire in the New York subway. Illegal immigration in the millions right now. You got the material to build a wall. You don't want to build the wall. So what do? You sell it. Because that's the best thing. That's the fiduciary obligation you have being met for your constituents. They spent taxpayer dollars to buy you a lot of metal. And they decided to sell that metal at 5 cents on the dollar. We don't have, by the way, I had one listener who texted in. I think it was Mike from Athens. Yeah, he did. He said, was it Mike? No, it was somebody. Hang on a second. Oh, shoot. One of my texters had texted in and said that it was Mike from ARAB, I'm sorry, said a judge stopped the selling of the wall. I can find no evidence of that, Mike. If you have an article that says that, please tell us. But we even searched again during the break. There's no evidence that any judge has interposed right now an order that would enjoin the Biden administration from selling the materials. More to come on that. I hope he does. I think the compelling argument's been made to stop it. But we're in this fever dream where they're quickly sending more money to Ukraine. They're quickly paying off student loans. They're quickly commuting the sentences of death row inmates. And then, oh, by the way, how about this? While we're at it, can we just throw a whole lot more money at green projects? Like stuff that makes no sense. How about that? Here's a good idea. Why don't we take a company that is struggling and give them, I don't know, $6.6 billion so they can build EVs in Georgia? Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Who's got the checkbook? You can't make a movie script like this. This is like a surreal moment in history. 30 days to go, y'all. 30 days. Can we get there fast enough? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I am talking about, Alabama, y'all. Alabama. And I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Lots of things happening at Right Side, by the way, and you just heard me say that about our big signal footprint for radio. It's changing. I made an announcement a little while ago. So, first of all, just know this. Coming up after the first of the year, we will be on the air in Chattanooga live every day. So we're adding that to the lineup. However, those of y'all that listen to us on 101.1 out of Birmingham, that contract is coming to a close. We had contract renegotiation time, and we decided that the best thing for us was to part ways. I'll leave it at that. But the reality is this. If you were a 101.1 ruffian out of Birmingham, just know that January 1, it's going to change, and they're going to have some other programming on, but you can still find us every single day, and I would encourage you to do so. And a lot of you already figured that out. You can go online to YouTube. You can go to Twitch. You can go to Rumble. You can go to two different places on Twitter, which is you can go to @SendPhilWilliams, my personal account, or you can go to rightside_media, our corporate account, and watch the show, listen to the show every day. You can also just stream it right from our website, rightsidemedia.org. Get all the different ways. And by the way, here's the thing. And this is a big deal for us. And you guys really put us over to a new point like last week, But we grow as a company, and then the platforms we're on, they have thresholds you have to meet. And so if you go onto one like, say, Twitter or YouTube is a big one for us. If you go on YouTube and go to Right Side Media and we're on, and you haven't already hit subscribe, it doesn't charge you anything. All it does is makes it easier for you to find us next time. But it gives us a leg up because YouTube will allow us to do more as we have more subscribers. So if you don't mind, subscribe or follow or like or whatever the case may be would mean a lot. So check that out. Yes, you can still find us every single... I mean, Charlene listens to the show every day just by streaming it on her phone. It's super easy. I'm in the finishing... I got to finish this up. I mean, the fever dream of Biden is driving me crazy. I will tell you this, a story that I did not have, I just see it now. I'm looking at one of the screens here. So this thing about Biden commuting 37, so there's only 40 people on death row in the federal government, the federal penitentiary system, only 40. 37 of them last night got blanket commutations of their sentences. So they are now going to be no longer having to worry about the electric chair. It's just, it's sick. There's two articles side by side right now on foxnews.com. One of them is headlined, Biden unleashes a flood of fury with his decisions just week before his presidency ends, saying it's totally nuts. But the other one right next to it is the one that bothers me. Meet the victims. And it has pictures of two little elementary school age girls. And it says, the serial killer who robbed these young girls of their lives is among the many monsters that have just been spared by Biden. That's what we're looking at here. Is we got an ideologue presidency who does not even know he's signing things, in my opinion, who just said, I think the law that says that those monsters should be held to account and have to suffer the death penalty, I just don't like that no more. So I'm going to do away with that for 37 out of 40 people. It's just messed up.
I think he should be asked next time he does anything with the press to name one person that he pardoned or / commuted their sentence. And just name one person you did that for.
Yeah.
See if you can.
Besides your son.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Son, of course. Hunter Biden.
You still know Hunter. I think he still knows Hunter.
Yeah.
But, yeah, can he name the names? Because you're right. I mean, that would tell me he didn't bother reviewing the files. If there were one person on death row whose sentence he commuted, I'd go, dang, man, come on, really? Okay. 37 out of 40? No. How about this story on AP, Dateline, about 3 weeks ago. President Biden's administration announced that the U.S. Department of Energy will make a $6.6 billion loan to Rivian Automotive to build a new factory in Georgia that had stalled as the startup electric vehicle manufacturer struggled to become profitable. Let me make this abundantly clear. This is what we call jackassery. This is jackassery with your money. This is jackassery of the highest order. This is jackassery that you look at it and go, you know what? There's really no common sense here. It's just jackassery. That's all there is to it. President Joe Biden's administration is going to loan $6.6 billion to an electric vehicle manufacturer that had stalled its manufacturing processes because it was struggling to become profitable. Let that sink in. So, I don't know. Let's say I own a business that makes widgets. Widgets are not very popular. Widgets are not selling. I can't get widgets. The market for widgets has gone down. So, I go to the government. I go, can I just have some money? And they look at us and go, well, your widgets do fit our agenda. So, sure. Here's a bunch of taxpayer money. What this is, too, is not just a flat-out waste of money. This is the government picking winners and losers. Because if that was a combustion-based, you know, engine, you know, in those cars, they wouldn't get the loan. They wouldn't. Trump has previously vowed to end federal electric vehicle tax credits, and Rivian, you know, which made a big splash when it started off, has just tanked. I mean, every Rivian vehicle costs like over $70,000. So what the heck, man? You got 70,000 plus baseline on their vehicles. They've got a plant in California with a $5 billion plant, and they built another one in Atlanta, and then lo and behold, they couldn't maintain. So the government's going to give them money to just go go you there for? While we're at it, why don't we build more offshore wind farms? I'm just full of all the good news. This fever dream, listen, you're shaking your head, but this fever dream is broad, is it not? This is a...
Nothing would surprise me of anything he does, no.
I hold in my hands a story datelined this weekend. Oh, by the way, this one is a release from the Department of the Interior. This is not a news story. This is a press release. They're so proud of it.
Yeah, they want it known.
They did, which is why they released it over the weekend when no one was paying attention. Except me, because I take care of my ruffians and I get them all the news. The Biden-Harris administration announced the approval of the South Coast Wind Project, the nation's 11th commercial-scale offshore wind energy project approved under President Biden's leadership. Yeah, that's great. It's going to produce 19 gigawatts of clean energy from offshore. Now, where is this one going to be? South Coast Wind? I think this is going to be in the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah. Okay. Great.
Clean energy.
It's going to be clean energy. It's not going to kill whales.
No. Or
there's not going to be any vibrations that affect the tectonic plates. No.
Or any birds that are flying over
at
that moment. No.
Come on. Please. It's going to be sustainable. It's going to be renewable. It's going to be perfect. Perfect, they say. Yeah. Until, yeah, they all collapse and form, you know, unnatural reefs at the bottom. I do have one good news. The fever dream. It's like he began to wake up. Could this be? I don't know how to explain it. But the one thing that I did not expect to see is this one right here. Dun, dun, dun. Dateline this weekend. Very quietly, without saying much about it.
No press release on this one.
Friday afternoon, that's right. On a Friday afternoon, TheHill.com reports the Biden administration withdrew its pending regulation governing transgender athletes. In other words, the Title IX thing, the whole Title IX thing, they're like, okay, we won't do it. You know why? Because they were being sued. That's why. They mooted all the cases. So they made everybody have to file suit. And then in the dark of night, on a weekend, right before Christmas, after fighting for it for a year, they went, oh, let's just pull that back. And that's what they did. So, yeah, the education department realized that they had a losing streak going, and they were about to get their backsides handed to them, and that the Trump administration was going to wind up just quitting the case anyway by mooting the whole issue when they came into office in a few weeks. And so they just quietly pulled it over the weekend. After ruining a bunch of girls' lives who lost their scholarships and didn't get medals, hey, by the way, we're going to, yeah, we're doing away with that. I'm sorry, could you say it louder? We're doing away with that.
Can you really put a press release on that one, please?
I can't help it. By the way, thank you to all of you who resisted the Title IX rewrites, because that's what kept this thing from taking effect. Mm-hmm. It's people like, you know, our friends like Riley Gaines and Emily Jones and her friends and Lee from Huntsville being one, Moms for Liberty. All out there going, stop this right now. The Biden fever dream. Wow, we can't get out of here quick enough.
So I have one quick question on that. This popped up into my head after we moved on from the topic, but I saw some people like Charlie Kirk tweeting about their concern that this may happen. What do you think, A, the likelihood is that they'll try this, and then the likelihood, if they do try it, that it will work, of Biden somehow pardoning every illegal American illegal citizen that is in America, pardoning them so they won't A, get deported, or I don't know what is the likelihood that he tries to pull something like that?
Huh. Okay. Doubtful. I don't know that it's manageable, because you have to designate by name and they don't even know who's here.
That's a good point.
I don't think they can sustain that. Because I believe that's also a congressional thing. I don't think he can do it by executive order, especially since you put people on parole, so they're not technically being pardoned. They're already paroled, many of them. And then I also look at it and go, how are they gonna make this stick? And it does not give them citizenship. He's not granting amnesty by doing that.
Yeah.
So if they don't have citizenship, then they're still here illegally, regardless of whether he's going to penalize them for the crime of arriving here legally. It doesn't mean they're allowed to stay, because the laws which are enacted by Congress are what govern whether or not someone can have access to our country.
Yeah. I've just seen a lot of people worried about that. You know, if they can do preemptive pardons or blanket pardons on anything, then why can't, you know, people are wondering if he's just going to say, well, everybody here that's illegally, you're pardoned, you're good, you know.
I'm still waiting for him to pardon himself.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
That's true.
I'm still waiting for him to say, I hereby pardon me. And he'll do that on a Friday afternoon, like right before we go into New Year's or something.
Or like an hour before he leaves office on January 20th.
There's that.
I'm hereby pardoned. I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, boy. He says he is coming to Trump's inaugural, though.
Yeah. The video of that was annoying, too, by the way. I don't know if you saw the video, but
no.
It was a reporter. He was like, well, you know, Trump did not make your process of coming in easy at all. He very much inhibited it. So what is causing you to, you know, be so gracious and show up to his inaugural?
He's screwing everything up. What are we talking about?
And
here?
Biden goes, well, just because somebody tries to get in the way of democracy doesn't mean that everybody should. And the reporter was just like sitting in awe of him. And it's just like, shut. You don't even believe what you're saying. You don't believe what you're saying, Joe.
Yeah, that's just awful. Thomas from Athens says a possible additional jackassery. Since Biden is signing all kinds of feverish documents someone puts in front of him without Biden realizing what he's signing, suppose there's a whole stack of preemptive pardons for numerous administration officials and other progressives in Biden's cabal of socialists. I'm not going to be a bit surprised, man. We got a new texter in the line who has not told us their name, but I see you asking for it. So tell us who you are and where you're from. Biden's acts are criminal, treasonous. All the decisions need to be overturned. He needs jail time for treason. He's destroying America, destroying America's integrity. Okay. Probably not going to happen, but okay.
Do you see Navy Phil's text about the wind?
No, Navy Phil, wind farms in the Gulf, how long will they last during the hurricane season? Just asking.
That's a great point.
I just, you know, do they make them with like folding blades so you can tuck them away? I don't know how that works.
Well, you know what? Before they go out in a blaze of glory, they're going to generate a lot of clean energy. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, by golly. Yeah, jackass wind farm. Ben from Decatur says, regarding Biden giving billions to Rivian, hasn't all loans to electric vehicle plants went belly up? I mean, lemmings never learn. Yeah, I mean, lemmings keep jumping off the cliff, don't they? What the heck? By the way, did you know that Lemmings to the Sea was actually fake?
No, I did not.
I think I did a whole monologue on it one time. It's a pretty epic story. Jim from Grove Oak, Alabama, says these insane Democrats must not realize that Cronkite and Brinkley, et cetera, are the only ways we have of keeping up with their shenanigans. Here's to hoping they never smarten up. Well, Cronkite and Brinkley, I mean, that's old school, dude, but even still, I hear what you're saying. We got to keep talking. Keep talking. We got a Merry Christmas from Roughly Ann from Huntsville. Roughly Ann, Merry Christmas to you. David from Coleman saying, today is Christmas Adam because Adam came before Eve. Oh, I see what you did there. Awesome. And our new texter, by the way, is Doug from Huntsville. Doug, welcome to Right Side's text lines. We're glad you're part of the Ruffian team. All right, listen, we got plenty more where that came from. Let me, that was not our new texter. Doug from Huntsville says texting in. Okay, Doug, good to hear from you, man. All right, we got more. I'm switching gears. Term limits. Did you hear about Kay Granger? She's a Republican, and it's a problem. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Well, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hardly any time to the top of the hour to go ahead and intro this topic, but I'll do the best I can. So I've got an article here, which I have not even had a chance to go through in great detail because it's a lengthy one. I mean, this one, Wall Street Journal came out with a report that is roughly 10 pages long, that is pretty damning. They went back and they interviewed upwards of 40 people who had worked in the Biden White House or had been in key positions, you know, throughout the administration where they would interact with the White House. And they extensively went across the issue of how did President Biden truly fare? Was he with diminished capacity? And overwhelmingly the report saying yes. Now, first of all, I'm thinking, so why did you do this now? Is it because you couldn't get the answers before? I mean, how long have you been working on this? I don't know. This would have been a great report to have had, oh, I don't know, 2 years ago. But nonetheless, what we're seeing right now is that this report, which you can hear how thick it is, this report, which I want to say 1, 2, 3, 4, four separate members of the Wall Street Journal staff collaborated to put this together, clearly indicates in an anecdotal fashion, not just like rumors have it. No, they went and they got stories about in this meeting on that time, on this way we did this, whenever these things happened, here's what we would do. Here's the response. Here's why we did it that way. And it's just, it was constant shielding, like stories being told of, no, we can't do that today because this is a bad day for him. You don't get to have bad days. You're presidential 365 days a year, 24/7. This job does not turn off at 5 p.m. You don't have the ability to ever see something happen that can just be written off for the day when you're president of the United States. And I'm just telling you, the reality is we have had a ghost president now for 4 years. And I can't even begin to explain it. The reality is that we've had a ghost president and the staff knew it. And what really galls me is his wife knew it. I mean, the people who love him and were the closest to him just let it happen? Well, okay, no way to truly explain that, but it kicks off the topic that I'm in right now. Term limits. Term limits. If we know for a fact that someone is having diminished health or a question of capacity, how can we have them running our country? And I don't say that lightly. How can we have them running our country? How do we have someone who is an octogenarian, or for that matter, even over 90? And I recognize that some may be very sharp at that age, and some of them can't tie their shoes, and yet they're wheeled in to vote. And then why? Why are you still there? But we're going to talk about what just happened with Representative Kay Granger, who has a long history, strong Republican from Texas. Y'all, it'll boggle your mind. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three on this Christmas Eve Eve. And somebody else called it what? Christmas?
Christmas Adam.
Christmas Adam, because Adam comes before Eve.
Yeah.
Hey, I intro'd the topic right before the top of the hour. I'm talking about term limits. Wow. Listen, down in Montgomery, when I was in the state Senate, I was one of the only senators who would consistently co-sponsor bills for term limits, and they never came out of committee. I mean, you couldn't get them moving. Myself, Tripp Pittman, a couple other guys, and then we all term limited ourselves, too. Like, I was there for 8 years and decided that running for a third was not what I was supposed to do because it was not my identity. And yet so many in public office, they get in there, and it's not just their career, it's their identity. They don't know what to do with themselves if they're not elected. And that's why too often you see somebody who has been in office for 35, 40 years and they're well into their 80s. It's like they don't care that they have grandkids. They could care less, but they don't want to do with themselves if they're not in power. And so they never leave. And we got a massive problem with this right now with this Representative Kay Granger story. Listen, I'm going to bring somebody on to just kind of opine with me about it a minute. A guy that I just think the world of, State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, represents District 7 up in the northwestern part of our state. It's Lawrence Colbert, Morgan County. And he's a constitutionalist, and he's even been a guest host on Right Side. He's a true Right Side ruffian. Ernie Yarbrough, how you doing?
Brother, I am doing fantastic. I got even happier when I heard that I get to come on the show and talk for a minute. I have had knee surgery, and so I have been stove up recovering. But as you can imagine, somebody like me that doesn't like to talk and is very shy and doesn't enjoy being around people, hiding away in my house has been just a very natural thing for me.
Yeah, like not. By the way, you didn't just have knee surgery. You had like knee reconstruction after you just tore the whole thing to pieces.
Yeah, so turns out being 43 years old and running routes on AstroTurf at the Auburn Athletic Training Facility wearing, you know, multiple inch thick dress shoes probably is not a good idea.
No, something about when your kneecap was on your thigh later on is what I heard.
Turns out there's a tendon there called the patellar tendon. Turns out the good Lord made it for a purpose, which includes attaching at the bottom of your kneecap and holding it in place. So Intelligent design has many, many important uses.
Yes, it does. And it's a good thing you had intelligent surgeons to put it back in place.
Amen.
All right. Well, listen.
It's a blessing. It's not 100 years ago. They just cut my leg off. That's a blessing.
Well, sure. I am glad that you are, going to be mobile again, and at the very least, you're still able to talk. But, So did you hear this story, by the way, Ernie, this Representative Kay Granger, she is a career politician, but she's a longtime Republican from Texas, and she has been in Congress since like 1990 or something, and she was the mayor of Dallas. She's been AWOL since July. No one knew where she was, and they just found her in the dementia ward of a nursing home, but she's still holding office in Congress.
Yeah, wow. I did some research when I heard the story drop, and I was on different news sites and app, and I was like, she's fixing to finish her 14th term, 81 years old, right, elected in like 1996, and mind blown, as you said, that she's been AWOL for all this time, and no comms from anybody, yeah. You know, to her constituents or anybody that she's in a dementia condition. And it just struck me when I read this story. You know, there's a whole, as you know, my campaign slogan is Make Alabama Local Again. I'm writing a book called Make America Local Again, which I hope to have out early in the spring.
Wow.
But the whole concept behind it, the whole issue behind this, is which just begs the question of, well, as you brought up, term limits, right, is the whole concept of the structure of American politics and what did our founders intend versus what it's become.
Yes.
And I think, you know, so often it gets back to, for me, I want to challenge the American people, right? Because we're supposed to be a grassroots, bottom-up country of politics. And so I think behind this, there's a bigger story here of how Americans have to change their mindset about public service and taking control of and taking charge of their own political future.
I completely agree. And I realize, too, that some of what happens in our, especially in the legislative branches, runs on seniority, and I know that. But at the same time, that does not mean that you have to stay there for 35, 40 years. You don't have to be there until you're 80, 90 years old. And I look at these people and I think, do you not have a life? Is this your life? Is this all you have? Because
that's right.
It's just...
Well, that's what leads to having a spending bill, right? That's 1,600 pages.
Yeah. And no one
blinks. As opposed to 120 pages off of, you know, a few posts on X. And I think, again, behind this, you have people who are there all this time, decades and decades. They form all these relationships unhealthy with lobbyists, backdoor dollars, backdoor interest. And so that becomes their way of, hey, I come in with a net worth of $200,000. I'm going to leave with a net worth of, say, $80 million, right? And the reality is behind this, here's what I think is the bigger takeaway. You know, because I think so often the government has this idea of, or this vested interest of, hey, the problem was with the government. The problem was with the feds. Blame the feds and the feds will solve the problem. No, the problem here, I love my constituents and the American people. And when we acknowledge that the fault is ours, then we can fix it. The problem is the American people. We have failed to take responsibility for our elected officials and that, you know what, you're meant to be there for a few terms. And you're out, because the whole idea of representative government, right, is that it's of, by, and for the people. And it's kind of like, you know, growing up, you know, when in your generation and then before you, my dad's generation, right, it's like military service. It was like, hey, you're in for a few years. It's good for a man to serve. He gets out. He goes about his duty. Right. And so the same concept here is, and what the founders intended, political office is never meant to be a career. It wasn't meant to be a way to make a living, right? The initial Continental Congress, they didn't make a salary.
Right.
They were all men who owned their own businesses, right? They came in, they served, and they went home. So they had short terms. And I think behind this, we've got to reevaluate and change that political career should not be a career. It should be a true method of public service whereby someone comes in, does their duty, and gets out.
Yes, absolutely. And I can't feel that stronger than I feel it right now. I mean, I'm looking at, and I, you know, granted, in Montgomery, you and I have both seen people whose actual identities are being elected. They don't know what to do with themselves if they weren't in the state legislature or doing something in the state mm-hmm. government. But in D.C., it almost feels like it's a pandemic of decrepitness. I mean, I'm looking at Kay Granger. They find her in a dementia ward And no one has said boo about it to her constituents for 6 months. People are livid now that they're finding out. Then you got like Mitch McConnell. McConnell had another fall the other day. He's had multiple health events that were clearly indicators that he is no longer firing on all cylinders. And he now has a concussion that he's getting over with just from a few days ago when he fell in the Capitol building. And when you got articles being written by Politico and Vox and others that are saying this kind of stuff, you know it's not just the Republicans saying it. And it's a bipartisan issue. Dianne Feinstein, she was, 89 years old. 89.
Yep.
And no longer had the cognitive or physical ability to even do her job, but she was still in office. And it's just...
Yeah, you see it with Nancy Pelosi. You see it with that crazy purple-haired woman from Connecticut or whatever.
Wow.
talking about how that we need female crash dummies because there's a gender inequality in crash dummies. I mean, this kind of insanity and stupidity is so not only so far divorced from a Christian worldview, but from even anybody that has one eye and half sense. But this is where, again, my plea back to the American people is, what if we had the same passion to raise up public servants as we did for our football teams?
Yeah.
Right? Like, don't even supersede your love for football. Just match it. And what you would find is, instead of having our young people obsessed with, you know, making that next sports team, if we modeled for our young people the next debate team, the next we're gonna have a competition and work towards the next person who's gonna serve the next two terms, and then you're done,
yeah.
Right? But it's all about how we, as the adults in the room, instead of as Americans being obsessed with pleasure and ease and comfort and all the things that don't inconvenience me, it gets back to, right? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And it's high time, and this is my prayer as we, you know, talk about hope and faith for our future and our country, that we talk about making America great again. How about making public service great again, in the sense that this is my contribution, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to hand the baton and keep going. And there's I see this on local government all the time. Well, there's a crisis in local government of a refusal or a lack of ability to know how to hand the baton off to the next generation or to the next group of people coming through who need to step into those roles of public service.
Yes.
And when you view power and public service as a way to give you a platform and a position of prosperity and influence that you would otherwise not have through honest labor, that's a huge problem.
That's a huge problem. And you're so right. And I love the idea of passing the baton, but I think there are times though that we're going to need to have to figure out a way to literally wrest the baton out of their craggy fingers, because they won't let it go. And
sure.
And I don't know that we'll ever get a term limit. People don't realize that we need term limits. It's the people you want a term limit that have to vote for the bill to term limit themselves. And good luck with that.
But the way that you accomplish that then, right? The way that you accomplish that is there has to be a fire in the hearts of the people
to raise
up somebody from the grassroots to run for office.
That's right.
And be the change.
That's
right?
Exactly
so,
right.
So again, you can complain about term limits, but if you're not willing as churches and community groups to raise up individuals to fund them, enable them, equip them, and hold them accountable, you're just blowing smoke, which gets back to the American people have got to take a long, hard look in the mirror. The people of Alabama have got to take a long, hard look in the mirror and say, if we really believe this, and it's not just talking points because we want to sound like we're conservative cool cats, what is the actual cost going to look like for us to accomplish this?
Man, as always, I knew you'd nail it. I knew you would. I knew you'd nail it. Hey, listen, we got to take a break, Brother Ernie, and then I want to come back and change gears with you. And Christmas being tomorrow, I want to talk about faith in the public arena and your thoughts on that before we close up, all right?
Let's do it.
All right, we're taking a break right now. We're with State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, who so ably represents the folks of State House District 7 up in the northwest part of our state. He is a ruffian. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing. Going right back to the phones right now with State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, represents House District 7 up yonder in northwest Alabama, Lawrence, Colbert, Morgan County. Hey, so Ernie, I'm switching gears on you here real quick. I've got a segment I'm doing called Faith Rising, and there are some who are studying this and saying that Christianity in particular is sort of falling by the wayside. And yet, at the same time, there are studies saying that there are more first-time Bible buyers than ever before right now in the United States. I got some great quotes that I'll run later after you and I finish up talking about, you know, Cardinal Dolan, especially up in New York City, talking about, you know, faith in the public square. But your thoughts on that as we head into Christmas?
I think that it's incredibly exciting to see. I believe God's at work. I lead history tours in Scotland. I love church history. You know, there was a time in Scotland when over 90% of the people couldn't even read. And it was through a desire to buy Bibles and read Bibles that it sparked the entire, not only birth of Western civilization, but even the scientific revolution. And I think that knowing history is so encouraging because, you know, it teaches you what God has done in the past. It's been worse than it is now and what God has done, and it gives you such perspective. And I think with all this happening with Trump and, like, a national awakening, what seems to be the death of mainstream media, the rise of, just like in the 1500s, right, the birth of the Gutenberg printing press, the free flow of information, all of that was a, you know, they were under the tyranny of the Pope of Rome, who at that time, right, controlled financial, spiritual, and that was just the situation of that historical context, you know, 500 years ago, people got burnt at the stake for wanting to, you know, read the Bible in English or whatever. So a desire for knowledge and the free flow of information, right, the exchange of ideas. And I think in the context of all that's happened in this historical campaign, and now leading into Christmas, you know, Charles Dickens said that Christmas time changes our hearts, it seems, whether we wish it so or not. There's a power in the coming of Christ that it has over the most obdurate unbeliever that simply cannot be escaped. And I think you see this coming to fruition as well. So I've seen some reports that came out that says now there are now for the first time since like 1970 or something like that, a long time ago, that there are more men, young men, going to church than women now. And this is all birthed out of a context of things like Charlie Kirk going to all of these campuses, sharing the gospel and sharing political freedom and ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that all of these things have had to happen. COVID, Biden, bullets flying, votes stolen, all these things have had to happen in order, in the mercy of God, to shake us to our senses. And I'm actually very excited for the future.
You know, listen, thank you for that. And that was an amazing statement. But you're right. And I really do believe that there's you can sense it. I mean, it's one of those things you can feel it in your spirit. There's a shift in the spiritual, in my opinion, right now. And I believe that people are looking to Jesus far more than they were before. And I've got a poll here that came off of CBS News, believe it or not, saying that more Americans are hopeful about 2025 than they were for 2024. And I part of me wants to go, duh. But, you know, I look at it and go, this is great. I mean, they're looking at a 57% say they're now hopeful as opposed to 47% last year going into the new year. And I find that to be an amazing thing, but I think faith is the heart of it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that and the fact that you've seen massive amounts of untrustworthy, deceitful practices. And I think what's exciting to me, too, is people are learning that the old, if I could say the old gods, the old way of thinking that's dominated the public discourse for the last 50 to 100 years. Well, I can't put it any better than G.K. Chesterton. He said, you know, the new rebel is a skeptic and will not entirely trust everything. He has no loyalty. Therefore, he could never really be a revolutionist. Like there's no truth, right? My truth, your truth. He says, for all denunciation implies a moral doctrine of some kind. But the modern revolutionist doubts not only the institution that he denounces, but the doctrine by which he denounces it. And then he says, thus he writes one book complaining that imperial oppression insults the purity of women, and then writes another book about the sex problem in which he insults it himself. Right, he curses the Sultan because Christian girls lose their virginity, and then curses Mrs. Grundy because they keep it. As a politician, he will cry out that war is a waste of life, and then as a philosopher, that all life is a waste of time. Right, he denounces marriage as a lie, and then denounces aristocratic profligates for treating it as a lie. Right, he says that the man of this school goes first to a political meeting where he complains that savages are treated bad, and then says we are animals. Right, so people are learning the bankruptcy of thought and are learning to turn elsewhere to find something to believe in.
Ernie, you are the man. We appreciate you. Merry Christmas to you and yours, and we'll talk to you again soon, brother.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, that's State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, and we're coming right back with more on that. Faith Rising. We'll talk about it. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I am talking about, Alabama, y'all. Alabama. And I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. By the way, that will be changing a little bit in terms of the footprint. Just so you know, we just announced a few minutes ago or a little while ago on the show that just after the first of the year, we will be live on the air also in Chattanooga. So you can get us live daily in Chattanooga. And we're looking forward to just being a part of that. And we'll be a multi-state syndicated show and growing as we go. Now, we are also changing the footprint by leaving behind one of the stations we've been on for the last couple of years. And that's our Birmingham affiliate, 101.1. So if you are a 101.1 ruffian out of Birmingham, just know this. You are not like going to be in any way defeated from being able to hear the show. Every day live, we not only go live on the radio, but we are live streaming online, audio and video. That's the way my wife listens to it every day, just on her phone. So let me just suggest to you, if you've not already done it, go experiment with it and don't get caught off guard after the first of the year. Like, go to YouTube and just click YouTube, look for Right Side Media, and we're streaming right now. And if you haven't already done it, hit subscribe, because that not only helps you find us later, it helps us as grow as a company. You can also, oh, by the way, you can do things like go to Twitter. If you're on X, Twitter, go to @SendPhilWilliams. That's my account. You can go to @RightSide_Media. That's the corporate account. We're streaming there. You've also got our website, rightsidemedia.org. All this stuff, every one of those has the ability for you to stream the show. So 101.1, we had contract renegotiations. We felt like the end result was we were better off saying thank you anyway. And so we have decided the option is to come off that station January 1, but we're going to Chattanooga, so that's cool. Anyway, check it all out. We got plenty more where that came from, and we'll keep you posted as we grow. Jeff Rowe from Indiana is on line one. Jeff Rowe, how you doing, man? Merry Christmas almost to you.
Merry Christmas to you and your family almost, too.
Yeah, thank you, man.
I'm on I-64 heading toward Louisville right now. I got a buddy of mine from high school and everything. His son's playing a concert tonight, or in a bar tonight, that far from his band from Nashville.
That's cool. Yeah.
That's what I'm doing tonight.
how far are you from I mean, a lot of folks don't realize there's a whole section there they call Kentuckiana. There's so many folks that cross the river back and forth that they're two states. How far are you from Louisville?
Oh, I'm about 75 miles as the crow flies.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
So, downriver.
Well, for you, that's nothing. You drive all these routes to Alabama every day. That's like nothing burger right there.
Oh, yeah. It don't take no time to get to. In fact, it takes probably less time to get to Louisville than it does for me to go to Evansville, Indiana. So
yeah.
About the same distance. So.
And it definitely takes less time than it does for you to drive through rush hour in Nashville every day, right?
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine what it'd be like today.
I had to bring that up.
that brings back bad memories.
Well, so what's your thoughts on what we've been talking about today?
Hey, term limits.
Yeah.
We need term limits. I mean, if they got the president term limited, I think everybody should be term limited, because people aren't intelligent enough to vote people out. They get in there and they set the war chest up and they get all their backers and everything. That's why you got 80, 90-year-old people in Congress that basically gets wheeled in a wheelchair and everything, because they won't give them power.
Yep.
And, you know, they're beholden to their masters, basically. You term limit this stuff and everything, then every so often there's going to be two fresh names at least, to go into that position. And then the people can hopefully decide one over the other.
I completely agree. I mean, I don't see the problem with it. I'm a big fan. I used to call it the baseball rule, three and out. Do three terms, get out. But
yeah. I'm figuring, you know, something like a 10-year term for a congressman and maybe, you know, 12-year terms about 12-year terms for senators, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any problem with that. I mean, at 12 years, if you can't get something done in 12 years, why are you there? And seniority, if seniority is the way things run, well, you know, by the time you reach 12, somebody else is coming in, they're fresh. Guess what? You're senior to them, so you can be the chairman. It'll all be fine. But, it's, you know, These 40 and 50 years in office is unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm on the road to Turtletown right now, you know. Mitch McConnell. He's been in there way too long, way past his prime. So
I don't remember him not being in there. That's the thing.
Well, that's the way with me. It was, I think it was in the 70s.
It's unreal.
I believe he's come in there. It's been a long time. So it's it's time. You know, when you get to sit there and when you start freezing up and everything, you know, it might be time to let go of power. You know, take it easy and go home and sit with the grandkids.
I would absolutely agree. Well, listen, brother, you've enjoyed the show tonight, and enjoy your family, and Merry Christmas to you and yours, all right?
All right. I'm in Louisville. If your wife has anybody for me to say hi to, I'll stop by and say hi.
All right. Take care, Jeff. We'll see you, man.
Have a good one, bud.
Yeah, man. I'm going to play a sound clip here in a minute. So if you would, JP, get audio number one ready, Cardinal Dolan. So I'm closing out with this segment today, Faith on the Rise. I've got a piece from CBS News they published that came out just yesterday, actually. And it says, heading into 2025, Americans are more hopeful than discouraged and more outright hopeful than they were heading into 2024. Like they've got, looking ahead to next year, how do you feel? 57% said hopeful. And then when they asked them, to what do you credit that? Among those that were hopeful, why? And it was things like Trump becoming president, family relationships, the economy. Among those who were discouraged, why was it Trump becoming president and in politics generally? The people who are most optimistic are generally speaking the Republicans. New Year's resolutions were the usual kind of things about health and exercise and all that. But, you know, the thing is, I really don't think you should ever say that your hope is based in a thing of this world, because it will disappoint you. If you put your hope in people, any people, if you put your hope solely in people, at some point you'll be disappointed. If you put your hope in a thing, an institution, guess what? You're going to wind up being disappointed at some point. But the thing that they call the rock is a faith-based perspective, a faith-based worldview, and in my case, I really do believe a faith in the living God whose son, Jesus, was born at Christmas. I believe he's the way, the truth, and the life. I have no problem saying it, and I honestly and truly believe that my life is better because of it. And you might even look at it and go, Phil, I don't know that I cottoned all that. I mean, why would I assent to something that I can't see or touch? Well, I can't see the wind, but I can see the effects of the wind, right? I can't see everything about faith. Is a belief in things unseen. At the same time, I will tell you there are times in my life when I cannot explain what happened, except that it was something that I believe that God intervened on. And you can't take that away from me. If you took away everything in my life, you could not strip me of my own testimony. It's just the way it is. And I do believe that my salvation is assured, but I also really do believe the season that we're in is a part of the hopefulness as we come through that election, as we come through the politics, as we come through all of the mess we've been through the last 4 years, as we look at things that the left is still struggling to do. There's been like a war in the heavenlies, if you will. And I really do believe that we have been given a glimpse that things are going to be fresher in the year to come. I'm not saying it's going to be all easy and, you know, unicorns and rainbows. I'm not saying that at all. But I sense that there is a greater capability to deal with it, if that makes sense. Now, Cardinal Dolan from New York City, I've always appreciated his perspective. And Cardinal Dolan gave an interview recently to Maria Bartiromo. And he talked about this very thing. And I want to pick this up right around the 5:20-ish mark. It was a lengthy interview, and we'll do part of it now and maybe part of it after the break. But let's listen to what he had to say. Go ahead and play it.
People now are turning to faith than ever before.
They say that, and I am so happy to hear that. And what I'm happy to see, Maria, is that, what shall I say, experts and scholars who are not religiously driven are finding this out. They say, sales of the Bible, sales of books on spirituality are going up. And there seems to be a newfound appreciation for the role of faith, especially in our country, okay? I think President Trump tapped into that, don't you?
I do.
I mean, he's I've had talks with him before in the past where he's pretty blunt about, you know, he can't say that he was raised as a very zealous Christian, but he takes his Christian faith seriously. He has a lot of memories about Norman Vincent Peale, the famous preacher here in New York, down a ways on Fifth Avenue. And I think he means it, and I think the assassination attempts kind of renewed in him, oh my, there's something beyond me that I think is watching over me and has got a task for me. And what he expresses personally seems to be expressed more and more throughout the world. And that's part of America.
It's hard to explain, though, if it wasn't an act of God.
Stop there for a second. I love the way he said that's part of America. Yes, there are Christians in other parts of the world, but there are very few who can say they have a actual constitutional right to their faith-based beliefs. They have an actual constitutional right to worship and to assemble and to have a voice. And that voice can be about your faith, and that assembling can be for purposes of faith. That's one of the reasons why the COVID shutdowns were so egregious, because they weren't just shutting down businesses, they were shutting down churches. I mean, this is a violation of civil liberties. But I say all this to say, looking forward into the next 4 years, I will not tell you that Trump is a perfect person. I don't believe he is. There's not a perfect person. The only one who ever lived is the one we celebrate tomorrow, who was born in a manger. But the truth is this. There's a lot to be said for the way leadership allows an environment to be created. Leadership sets a tone. In the last 4 years, the Biden administration has done everything it can to claw away at traditions and faith-based positions and to strip back those things that we have held dear. Telling us that we have to, not that we should, but we have to accept that a man can be a woman, or that, you know, any number of things that we would like that abortion has to be accepted as just a right. You know, they campaigned. That was the sole issue they had for their campaign season. All that to say, leadership sets a tone. As goes the king, so goes the country, is one of the old sayings. And when you look at the way that the two leaders, Biden and Trump, set the tone, I believe that the Trump administration sets a far greater tone that allows for the increase of faith. I really do. And I join those who are hopeful for the coming year, not because I'm just a Trump acolyte, but because I believe there's been a lifting of the veil. I believe there's been a parting of the waters. I believe that we are looking at a time where we're going to see people who have been held back, suppressed even, in their faith, saying, yeah, I do believe. And I think we're going to see it resonate in our communities. I think we're going to see it resonate in our culture. We're going to take a break right now, but as we come back from this break, we will spend some time maybe unpacking a little more of what Cardinal Dolan had to say, and then head out into Christmas. You guys, we love you. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, we're going to go back to Cardinal Dolan just for a minute. I got a couple minutes here. I think I can take it. So let's go ahead and just play his thoughts on faith in America again.
I mean, President Trump, two assassination attempts, and one of them because he went like this, and it just missed him.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain other than it was God's work.
Yeah, you know, I think of, Maria, I think of Ronald Reagan and John Paul II. Both survived assassination attempts very close to one another. And when the two of them met for the first time, Ronald Reagan said to Pope St. John Paul II, Mother Teresa told me that she thinks the Lord spared me because the Lord has something special in mind for me. And Pope St. John Paul II smiled and said, she told me the same thing. And they both believed that. And look what they were able to accomplish.
Yeah.
The world was changed. The world was changed for the better because of them.
I mean, there seems to be a movement underway to acknowledge how powerful and important our faith is.
Yes, yeah. And what it is, I think, is Americans are good at reacting to tired caricatures.
Yes,
you know
good.
What I mean? I think we saw that in the last election.
Yep.
And one of the caricatures that seemed to overtake American culture was that religion was superstitious at best, toxic at worst. Mm. And if somebody was so weak that they needed religion, okay, that's fine for an hour on the Sabbath, but don't bring it into the public square. Don't bring it into it's private. And we know in the United States that religion, it's personal, but it's never private, because what we profess as people of faith, we bring graciously, humbly, lovingly to the public square. So that caricature of religion being nasty and destructive and harmful and antiquated, I think Americans are saying, we don't like that caricature.
So what do you want to say to people?
Stop it there. And that I thought that was a great part of setting the tone that I talked about. Was Biden allowed for the last 4 years for the caricature of Christianity to be about Christian nationalism and extremism and all the things and how, you know, and the things that we stand for were just, you know, like all of a sudden you've got you can't speak out about anything that violates your faith, even though it's your faith and you're supposed to be allowed the right to speak because you have the constitutional right to do so. But no, you can't do that. And they were going to wind up changing the regulations, changing the laws, mandating things, even to the point of people losing their jobs because they just weren't, you know, in the same mind. But never mind that it was a violation of their faith. All that to say, I really do believe we're going to see a different tone for the next 4 years, and I'm encouraged by it. And I know many of y'all are too. And it's not just about politics; it's about what the leadership tone is as we go forward that I think is so important. All right. Well, listen, I got to get a couple of texts here real quick. Thomas Mathen says, sincerely wishing everyone in the entire Right Side Media empire a blessed Christmas tide and Epiphany. He said, to quote Tiny Tim, God bless us, the Right Side Ruffians, and y'all beyond, everyone. Brian from Huntsville, I'm sorry. Yeah, he says, term limits. Yeah, forcing people to pass the baton. Absolutely. Jeff from Arab says, great show today, Phil. Just wanted to tell you, JP, and all the Right Side Ruffians, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Thank you very much. And you, same to you. And John from Huntsville says, JP gets an A+ for his fantastic performance. Ernie Yarborough gets an A++ for his spectacular performance, which means today's winner is obviously Phil with an A++. There was no point deductions, even though he came very close. Congratulations and Merry Christmas. Listen, we love you guys. You're an amazing audience. May the Lord God just bless you and keep you. May you just enjoy this season that we're in right now. And remember that Jesus is the reason for the season. Gift giving and all that is wonderful. And enjoy the time. But don't forget that there is a purpose and a meaning to the days that we are in. And I'm encouraged for the coming year. And a part of that is because of y'all and because the Ruffian family is going to also expand when we add Chattanooga. In the meantime, have an amazing time. And don't forget, there are indeed more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you.